Hi, Blogging Heads viewers. Bill and I are back again, and today I am coming to you live from the CPAC conference here in Washington, D.C.'s Omni Shoreham Hotel.
Can we see the cavalcade of conservative craziness behind you?
No, unfortunately not. I tried to get a quiet location where I could actually get this all to work. So I appropriated a conference room that really is not technically allowed to be here. So if there's some loud rumblings and I disappear, it's because Omni Shoreham Security has ended the session.
I was at CPAC last year, and I have fond memories of Mitt Romney winning the straw poll by 28% and being booed when he won, followed by the grand entrance of Newt Gingrich practically being built up as the party savior. But I imagine there's a different vibe in the conference hall this week.
Oh, yeah. Last year there was definitely I don't know if Gingrich was a saver last week. I remember Giuliani getting a very, very warm reception here last year. And I think he was kind of viewed more as the savior at that point. But you're right. The difference, at least as far as Romney, is night and day. Romney definitely packed this place with a whole bunch of college Republicans, and the campaign paid for their entrance fees here and for them to room up. So he really packed this place. But there was also lots of anti-Mitt sentiment from the rest of the conference goers. There was a dolphin called Flipper going around with a Mitt Romney shirt. They were giving out Mitt flops, which were flip flops with detailed flip-flops by Mitt Romney. So there was definitely an organized Mitt Romney resistance last year. And, of course, this year, going into day one of the conference yesterday morning, Mitt was the savior. When I got here at about 9:30 in the morning yesterday, I was greeted by a bunch of Romney supporters, college Republicans with, decked out in Mitt gear, handing out Mitt stickers. And he was definitely seen as the last great hope to avoiding a McCain candidacy, but that ended up quickly not being the case.
Now you have, of course, at CPAC many conservative activists, and you have, I imagine, a healthy contingent of conservative bloggers.
Yes.
And so my question is, and I don't know if you can answer this. It seems like there's deep anti-McCain sentiment amongst the conservative activist class, certainly amongst a lot of the bigger talk radio names. And we've discussed this in past Blogging Heads, that bloggers had long disliked McCain but kind of wavered back and forth to some degree over the course of the campaign. Is there a sense that their connection and their connection to rank-and-file Republican conservative voters has weakened because they are out of step with where a lot of Republican votes actually went in this election? Are they questioning their role in the movement right now?
No. I mean, as they would be quick to point out, if you look at the returns up until February 5th, McCain never won conservatives. He's always winning the independents and moderates are crossing over. So they would argue that they are still in step with the movement. It's just that the primary rules allowed people who weren't, movement conservatives to vote and decide the primary for them.
But it wasn't a shutout with conservative voters. He won enough. I mean, he could never win the election solely on the backs of moderates and independents. He needed a piece of the conservative vote, which he got.
Well, until February 5th, of all the states, whether it was Florida, New Hampshire, he never won among Republicans. It was always among, because both of those states allowed independents to vote. So
I'm saying it's not 0% with conservatives. It would be a minority. It would be, 20 or 30%. But there seemed to be, I think, an effective split amongst conservative voters that McCain came on the short end of, but still a big enough piece that he could cobble that together with moderates and independents and triumph.
Obviously he prevailed on February 5th.
If there was uniform sentiment amongst conservatives, that wouldn't have happened.
Oh, well, I think when you look at the exit poll, you'll clearly see the more likely someone was to identify themselves as conservative or very conservative, the more likely they were to vote for someone other than John McCain. you know, Mitt Romney accused the two camps, Huckabee and McCain, of having a backroom deal to keep Huckabee in the race. I don't think that's true at all. But, you know, Huckabee did definitely steal enough votes that if they would have split evenly, you know, probably would have helped Romney go over the edge in a bunch of those states. So,
and certainly Romney was the chief target of his ire in the past week. He didn't have many negative words for McCain, who was ostensibly the front runner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's hard to track, you know, who is hitting Romney the hardest, because the university didn't like him and went after him. But you know, as far as yesterday, he was the savior, and I was actually sitting on Bloggers Row. There's a whole two tables worth of conservative bloggers in the convention main convention area. Eric Erickson from Red State's here, Captain Ed, Mary Catherine Hamm, there was, as far as the people that were actually watching the speech, very few of them in the hall knew that Romney was going to be dropping out. It was actually a surprise, and the only reason I knew it was because I was doing my my morning read right beforehand, and I read on Mark Amater's blog that, he had quotes from the AP from Romney's concession speech. So it was a surprise to everyone there. I mean, I can 99% guarantee you that the Romney supporters that greeted me at the door at 9:30 had no idea that their guy was going to drop out, close to 2 hours later.
So there's no sense of introspection amongst conservative bloggers right now, just more grousing that moderates and independents have won the day?
Yes, yes, definitely. They definitely feel as though, the moderates and independents have won the day, and that's always been McCain's base. And I'm not going to lie to you, they're upset. A lot of them are despondent. I mean, I watched, the Lair NewsHour last night, and I thought it captured the mood well. You know, I think they interviewed one woman who said that she was close to crying because of Romney dropping out. So, I don't want to make it sound like everyone here, smiles because McCain's the nominee. But as far as, like, do the bloggers, are they worried that they're out of touch with the conservative movement? No. I mean, to the extent that, CPAC represents the conservative movement, everyone that comes by the bloggers' table is like, you guys are doing a great job, getting the message out there, et cetera. We're with you. If anything, they want us to hit McCain harder. I mean, if you look at the write-ups that McCain got on the bloggers that were here in reaction to his speech, except for Michelle Malkin, it was pretty much all positive. Eric Erickson called it the best speech McCain has given the election season. Even Romney, supporter number one, Hugh Hewitt, had kind words for McCain after the speech. So, if anything, the conservative bloggers are, kind of like, okay, this is our guy, we're team players, let's go ahead and do this. And, there's definitely more of a sentiment among the conventioners here that, they want, they're still bitter over it and want to go after McCain more.
So, is there going to be any kind of, there seems to be a closing of the ranks, but
yes.
But still dampened enthusiasm?
Oh, without a doubt. It's not something where Hugh Hewitt and the rest of them are going to be all McCain all the time. I mean, there is more of if anything, there's more of a sentiment. I mean, you were talking about talk radio earlier. There's definitely a sentiment among the anti-McCain bloggers that the Sean Hannitys and Laura Ingrams of the world didn't do enough to message about. Not voting for McCain early. They're saying that, both Sean and Laura waited until, a week before February 5th before they really started amping up their anti-McCain rhetoric. And so there's definitely a sentiment that they should have been doing it earlier and longer and harder, and that they could have made a difference if they made an effort, but that they all sat on the fence too long.
Now, we've talked about this before also, the origins of the anti-McCain sentiment, but I find this in talking with other liberals over the course of the last few weeks, so many liberals are just flat-out befuddled why there is such a difficulty for conservatives to embrace McCain. Liberals see a guy who wants to stay in Iraq for 100 years, wants a fast ticket into Iran, would put the same kind of conservative judges on the court, wants to privatize Social Security and Medicare. What's there for conservatives not to like? If you have some issues over, say, campaign finance reform on these big issues, you would seem to be in sync. So why is there that big a hang-up?
Wow. Where to begin? I guess we'll go chronological. We can start with the tobacco settlement. This is a classic, New Deal crony capitalism deal between the big tobacco companies who get to raise prices and solidify their monopoly, trial lawyers. And McCain was an architect in that, getting bipartisan support, for that, gave billions of dollars to trial lawyers. And, of course, created all these stupid anti-smoking things we see. Then we have his, decades-long support of campaign finance reform, which, just rankles conservatives because McCain courts the press so much, and then he doesn't like it when the conservatives are able to get their own messages out there through, utilizing the First Amendment to communicate. Moving on to judges, we have, he was a big part of the Gang of 14, which conservatives feel is usurpation of the president's right to put who he wants on the court.
You guys won that.
Yes, but he was on the bipartisan Gang of 14. I mean, I guess I'm always kind of find it humorous when you guys can't figure out why we don't like McCain when he's such buddy buddies with Lieberman. I mean, Lieberman just lost his super delegate status.
Lieberman's the guy that stabbed us in the back on judges. You guys got your way on the judges.
We got our way, but he made it harder.
He gave it a whole bipartisan sheen. You got as good as you ever could get.
What can I say? We're very demanding. I'm going to lay it up. Oh, yes, he was voted against the Bush tax cuts. And then we haven't even started on immigration yet.
Aside from the judges, which I don't understand why you wouldn't have accepted the result there, all those things you listed seem to pale in comparison to fighting them over there as well to fight them over here, and privatizing big entitlement programs on the big stuff. It seems you're still on the same page.
I didn't even mention global warming and cap and trade stuff. I think when you look at all those issues from the tobacco settlement to campaign finance reform to, cap and trade and global warming to immigration, there is just a sense that McCain does not have conservative free market instincts on any of these issues. He's for the government coming in and, telling people, what they can and cannot put in their bodies as far as smoking. These for the government coming in and telling people when they can and cannot speak for the First Amendment. He's for the government coming in and regulating the entire economy through strict carbon limits. It's just an instinctual. He's never, coming out on these domestic issues in a way that the approach is just not conservative.
So what next then for the conservative blogosphere as they head into 2008? How do they handle this kind of environment where again they're nominally supporting the top of the ticket, but they're not all that jazzed about it? What does that mean in practical terms? Do they not stand up for McCain when he's under attack, or is it just something that just private grousing and they would function the same way as they always would?
Well, I'm going to go to my crystal ball and say they'll just go into attack mode. They've been in attack mode against each other for so long, whether it was, Romney guys attacking Huckabee or Huckabee guys attacking Romney, Ron Paul attacking everybody. Pro-McCain bloggers there are attacking Romney and everyone else. I think you're going to see all those knives trained on more Democratic targets. They will definitely defend McCain when they can, but, part of the reason they're so upset is they can't really attack Clinton and Obama on global warming anymore because McCain has the same plan, and they can attack Clinton and Obama on immigration as far as they can because McCain's got his name on the same bill. So they definitely feel kind of hamstrung in what they can do for the general because of McCain's positions.
Is there any sense that deep down they know if the conservative movement and conservative bloggers keep some distance between themselves and McCain, they help McCain maintain a veneer of being in the center?
I don't think the conservative bloggers think that, but I think McCain definitely does. You know, with his speech yesterday, he came in and he said, okay, let's focus on what we agree on. But then he went ahead and mentioned immigration, which, you know, in front of this crowd, you know you're going to get booed.
You're pushing buttons.
Right, right. And so that was really the only time he got booed. And let me tell you, the people in the hall were all ready to play that part. So I don't think there's a conscience effort on conservatives' part to, you know, seem like they dislike McCain for McCain's benefit. Their dislike for McCain is genuine. I do think you're going to see McCain, you know, poking them every once in a while, like he did yesterday, to remind everybody in the media moderates, you know, that they feel that way about him. So I think you definitely saw a preview of that yesterday.
Where does the vice president selection come into play here? Obviously, there's going to be a lot of conservative pressure on him to pick someone that would pacify them. If McCain doesn't do that, does that again knock down the enthusiasm notch one more level, or is it already as low as it could possibly get?
No, you know, I don't think the ticket's going to be salvageable by a vice president nomination. If anything, what conservatives want from McCain now is to, you know, take the battle to Democrats. His biggest applause line yesterday was on FISA, saying, you know, he's going to go to the Senate and fight to make sure that the Protect America Act provisions get made permanent, and is going to make sure that the phone companies get immunity from cooperating with the government. So, you know, I think what you're going to see is conservatives, you know, saying, you know, if he goes to Congress and fights with us on, you know, the issues that we have in common, you know, we can have a working relationship here. So, you know, I don't think you're going to see, you know, a big vice president plan to assuage anybody. I as far as who's on top of the ticket, they know it's McCain, and you can't really mitigate that.
All right. Any other exciting CPAC doings of note?
No. I mean, you know, I think the big drama yesterday was just seeing all the Romney supporters in real time be told, you know, right in front of us that their guy was dropping out. It's not something you see every day in politics, to see people who woke up that morning coming to a convention ready to campaign for their guy finding out a couple hours later that the party's over.
How is the conservative blogosphere being treated there? When I was there last year, they seemed kind of squirreled away in the back, not really front and center. Are they being seen more as an integral part of the larger communications operation?
Yeah. Last year they had an award ceremony for bloggers, and they did that again this year. It was well attended. Floor space on the convention hall is, you know, always kind of different. I mean, it depends what time you come in. But I was there on Blogger Row yesterday, and people are always, filing past and saying hi, you know, because a lot of them, you know, read the bloggers on a daily basis. So for them, it's you know, an opportunity to get to meet people that they read every day. It's not like we do empty the Omni Shore and we're right there. But, we definitely have a prominent space on the convention floor.
And so what's next on the agenda? What are you dying to see before it's all over?
I've been so busy with yesterday and McCain, and some of our Heritage analysts were on some panels today. I haven't really gotten an opportunity to look at what's next. But I do.
Did they invite Ann Coulter back?
Actually, they did not. However, she is here. What happened was the Young America Foundation ended up sponsoring an event for her. So she's not on the schedule. She's not officially associated
with... She's not the marquee, you know, quasi-keynote that she has been in past years?
Well, not even that. She's just not even on the schedule. She's not even associated with the conference.
That's a very interesting development. I don't think it's been talked about that much. I wrote a piece a while back, you know, speculating that would be in the conservatives' best interest to move her off the stage.
Well, I don't want to make it seem like she's not here, because she is here.
Her speaking role at CPAC was the marquee speech with lines out the door, and she would do her essential anti-liberal stand-up routine. And that's what people seemed to almost come, you know, top the reasons to be at CPAC was to see her do her shtick. And of course, every time she did something that was, considered offensive, whether it was using an anti-gay slur or an anti-Muslim slur or what have you, and it seemed like CPAC's made a decision. She's not bringing good attention to this event, to the movement anymore.
No, you're right. There definitely was that sentiment. And if you go back and Google old Blogometer coverage of CPAC from last year, you'll see that there was some public discussion on the blogs of saying, you know, she's a dead weight. We need to cut her loose. However, from my contact with CPAC, she's also a real popular draw. And so there was a big thing of, you know, she's a popular draw. She turns out people, so, you know, we kind of want her. But, you know, decisions were made by people other than me that she would not be on the schedule at all this year, and so she's not.
Is there someone else that's sort of effectively taking her place in that slot on the schedule?
I don't know what you mean by that slot on the schedule. I mean, last year, you know, she had a book signing, and she introduced Mitt Romney. So it wasn't actually she had a,
had a big speech, I believe, at the end of the afternoon on the second day. I think it was introing Romney, but it's still a sort of her moment.
Right,
that people
right,
had
but,
to, I mean, the lines out the door that day were not for Mitt Romney.
No, you're right. There were lines around the door, but that was for her book signing, and then the only speaking she did was introducing Romney. So she doesn't have a book signing this year, and she's not on the agenda.
All right.
But moving on to the Democratic side, it looks like this is going to go, all the way to the convention?
I'm not 100% sure about that. You know,
well, draw me some scenarios then.
I'm sorry?
Draw me some scenarios then.
Well, the Paul King of the Washington Post did the math, and it is essentially impossible with the proportional delegate allocation system that each state provides. It's essentially impossible for any candidate to get 50% plus one of the needed delegates to secure the nomination through the primary caucus system.
Yes, very
so
true.
So if neither candidate drops out before then, it effectively becomes a superdelegate matter.
Okay.
And there's certainly, you know, consternation in the blogosphere, and I'm sure beyond the implications of that. However, one candidate puts together a good string of primaries, and there is a very clear lead in the delegate count within the elected pledge delegate count. There's going to be great pressure for the person on the short end to drop out beforehand and prevent a seriously messy convention. And that's certainly a plausible outcome still. So you'd be hard-pressed to make me guess how this is actually going to turn out at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just the whole problem with that scenario is that it would have to be a kind of more convincing delegate count. And, you know, Obama's got this string of smaller states that he looks poised to pick up between now and March 5th. But, you know, then you've got Texas and Ohio, and then after that you've got Pennsylvania. And the way things have been going...
You also don't know if Florida and Michigan are going to resurface in this calendar or not.
Right. Well, let's go ahead and cancel those out. You know, even if Obama takes, you know, the rest of those smaller states and Hillary, you know, keeps doing well with the down ballot or the more downscale economic whites and Hispanics at large and women, you know, then she should take, you know, Ohio, Texas, and Pennsylvania, leaving Obama with the rest of the states. And you know, at that point, you're going to have a very, very narrow Obama lead heading into the convention. And, you know, I've never met Bill or Hillary Clinton, but from what I understand about them, if it's going to be that close going into the convention, I don't see them throwing in the towel.
That is one scenario. And everyone's making a lot of presumptions about who is more likely to win what state. And, I think we should be very cautious in making those sorts of presumptions the way this race has been going. And there's one thing that I think is tricky for the Obama camp is they don't have the same flexibility in setting expectations the way the Clinton camp does. The Clintons can set the bar all the way to the ground, whenever they feel like it, and they don't risk hemorrhaging support. You know, there are enough people who are familiar with the Clintons. This is not the new kid on the block. There's deep love for the Clinton brand in some quarters, and they can go out and say, we're going to lose everything in February. And it doesn't guarantee they're going to lose everything in February. The Obama campaign is much more necessary for them to have a sense of continuing momentum, that they're really building something so they can knock off a de facto incumbent. They can't say we're going to lose everything this month, because that negates the whole argument of the campaign. So Obama's going to have to perform and win, I think, a good number of these contests in February, keep the delegate count close at minimum to stay afloat. And he can hope, his best-case scenario is that he runs the table in February and win after win after win gives him enough momentum that he can actually take Ohio and Texas and really just knock the Clintons off for good.
Yeah, I mean, he really would have to, you know, run the table in order to force their hand, before the convention. We've been saying for so long now that the net roots aren't really going to have an effect on the primary because, you know, they didn't really have a favorite going in. And, the New Republic has a article out today on the net roots rocky relationship with Obama, although really it's more about the Obama's rocky relationship with the net roots. But this is a scenario where I do see the net roots actually playing a pretty significant role because if there's one thing they have proven good at, it's, you know, creating a storyline, messaging, and, you know, using that power to, bend incumbents into, you know, acting in certain ways to serve the better good of the party, you know, whether it's donating money that incumbents had online to challengers, etc. And this is something, a scenario I could see the nervous playing a role, is if there is enough disgust with the superdelegate system that, you know, there is an organized drumbeat for all the superdelegates to honor the popular vote in the states that they're from. And that would, you know, essentially, take out of the hands of, you know, the smoke-filled backrooms politicians and probably give an edge to Obama. Do you see that as a possibility at all?
I'm not as convinced that the net roots are successfully, not that even trying, to create a storyline that is going to definitively impact the race.
Well, I think it's early to say that it is happening. But, you know, if you look at, like, you know, Open Left Chris Bowers and David Surratt and Atrios, you know, they're all saying, you know, this superdelegate system is not sitting us the right way. I mean, this is a story that, you know, is just kind of now developing. They're just kind of now looking at the lay of the land and saying, okay, we have this superdelegate problem. And, you know, we've got, you know, what, four or five months between now and the convention. This is something that I see that could develop into a story during that time.
I think in that respect, the Netroots, the blogosphere, and just Democrats in general hate the idea of this coming down to superdelegates. So that's just, I think it's more a reflection of just Democrats, period, than something that the blogosphere is uniquely focused on. And so they wouldn't be dictating the storyline there. They would just be reflecting mass sentiment. What I think there's sort of two branches of the net roots here that are relevant. On one hand, Obama cleaned up in the MoveOn.org primary.
Yeah, and now he's getting all that money.
And now he's getting money. He's getting activist support. He's getting people phone banking. He's getting people doing email persuasion. You know, one to one, people contacting their friends and so forth. So he has that. And I think the Daily Kos straw poll is decidedly for Obama now.
Yeah, it's up in the 90s. It's all done there.
Right, and it's not uniformly Obama. There are still people who post there on the front page who are pro-Clinton and people in the diary section. But you do have a lot of Obama sentiment there. With a lot of other well-read liberal bloggers, there is a lack of enthusiasm for both candidates. And they have really shifted their emphasis towards long-established narratives about the lameness of the media in general. And so what you see there, I think, is one, I think Obama has missed out on cultivating an army of truth squatters who could help him bat back misleading attacks from his opponent. He has had to do that largely on his own, not with an army of help. And secondly, a lot of the lameness in the media tends to be their irrational hatred of Clinton. So I don't think it's the intention of bloggers to be tipping their hand towards Clinton, but that's stuff that comes across the transom is stuff that's usually out of line on the part of attacking her. So, but it's not, it's certainly not, there's definitely not a definitive endorsement in the blogosphere in general between one candidate or the other. And so they've somewhat taken themselves out, you know, intentionally or unintentionally, in determining the outcome of this race.
Yeah, no, I think we've been all saying for a while, and, you know, when I still had the blog on, I covered it, you know, Obama definitely has his own problem with the Netroots, and, you know, they don't really have, a solid, horse in this race that they're supporting. But I do feel as though, you know, if Obama, you know, does come out with a, you know, somewhat sustained delegate lead, and it looks as though it's going to be up to the superdelegates, I do think that the Netroots will coalesce around a push.
Well, I think that's true either way. Anyone who has a decent enough lead, and what is a decent lead is obviously utterly subjective, whether that's one delegate or 10 delegates or 100, I don't know. But whatever ephemeral sense that there is a real lead there, I think bloggers and Democrats in general are going to have put massive pressure to ensure that superdelegates don't tip it the other way. And that's arguably a point for the rise of internet politics in general. You know, you can hear the sentiment of the grassroots in an instantaneous way that wouldn't have been true if this was 1984, where I believe Walter Mondale effectively did win because of superdelegates and not because of elected delegates. And I think I was 12 years old at the time, so this is not really from memory, but my understanding is that the media's delegate counters as things went along all were including superdelegates from the beginning. So there wasn't a real clear sense that this race was being swung by superdelegates. It was baked into the cake in people's perceptions from the beginning. And so when Gary Hart lost the last contest on the last day of the primary season, that was considered to be over. That's not happening right now. People are acutely aware of the difference of the superdelegates and the elected delegates, and the internet can put great bear, not just individual bloggers, but in reflecting the sentiment of the rank and file to ensure this doesn't become a backroom deal.
No, I agree. I'm a big fan of the internet's effect on politics. Yay,
we
internet.
Agree.
Well, on that happy note, how about we sign off for the week, Bill?
That sounds great. I'll have a fun time for the rest of the conference.
Oh, I will. I have a happy hour in about an hour, so I will have a good time.
I understand conservatives party hard.
We try. Talk to you later, Bill.
Take care.
Bye.